believe it. I can't believe it. Charles Leclerc has gone off the road on the formation lap. Absolutely extraordinary.
No, I lost the hydraulics. I lost the hydraulics. Why the f*** am I so unlucky?
This is the formation lap. That is what happens. Everything seizes up, spat into the wall. Nothing he could do. Passenger, look, he's just warming tires, getting into the temperature window. Everything locks up straight to the scene of the accident. His Grand Prix over before it had even begun. We are down to 19 on the grid. The demise of Charles Leclerc is over. Green flag at the back. The Sao Paulo Grand Prix is 5 lights away. Formula One goes racing in Sao Paulo once again. Good reaction time for Lando Norris. Has an opportunity to go past all of them. Big crash in the middle of the pack. I think Alex Albon is into the wall along with the Haas as well. That is real disappointment for Kevin Magnussen, who's found the barriers. We will almost certainly need a safety car immediately. It is an incredible getaway for Lando Norris, who's up to second position. Unbelievable stuff. The safety car is out. What a dramatic opening few moments of the Sao Paulo Grand Prix.
There's the contact further back, and Nico Hülkenberg as well got hit by that flailing tyre. And it's Magnussen that comes across, squeezes Hülkenberg towards Albon, and it's Hülkenberg and Albon that touch, and Magnussen then is collected by the Williams that's then way out of control.
Yeah, debris hit my rear wing. It's broken. Yeah, I tried to miss it. I think it was a piece of a tyre in the air, but it got my rear wing.
And the red flag is flying at Interlagos because it's a big cleanup. The Sao Paulo Grand Prix resumption is 5 lights away. Formula One is racing once again, and it's a good launch off the line for Max Verstappen. Exactly what he needed. The two Brits go wheel-to-wheel into turn number one. Lando Norris, I think, will hold second place, and he does so. Hamilton maintaining third, but he's going to have the advancing Aston Martin of Fernando Alonso all over the back of him, down to turn number four. Good run at this point. No DRS at this stage. Fernando Alonso against his old racing rival to the inside of four. How brave is he feeling? There's your answer. He's up to third place.
Really good move from Alonso there. Wasn't given a lot of space. Hamilton can fight back, but this is tricky up towards turn six. Quick right-hander, and Lewis has to back out.
Look at this at nearly 200 miles per hour down to turn one on lap number 8. And that is a defensive shape thrown by Max Verstappen, who is under pressure from his great friend. They're at the front of the field. They're battling now for the lead in Sao Paulo. Only once has Max Verstappen won at this configuration. Lando Norris has never taken the win at a Grand Prix, and he's going around the outside, or at least trying to. Brilliant effort from Lando Norris. Here's the move for Perez. It's been coming for a while, and the Mexican driver finally dives to the inside. The tactics were good from Mercedes. Can George Russell fight back? They were working as a team. He will now get the DRS this time from Perez, who's cleared him. But can he stay ahead? Millimeters between them. Russell places the car well. Perez fights back in the braking zone, and he tries the up and under. He nearly nudges into his rival, but Perez is up to fifth. This is driver's eye view with the man who is trying to turn fifth into fourth, and he will do so. Sergio Perez, fine drive yesterday into the top three of the sprint. They're cheering for him at Interlagos because he's made his way by. Stroll in good position, Stroll in great position to improve 10th place to 9th, and that was not even a fight.
Those guys have both pitted. That's Stroll on Russell, that's good position. And Mercedes struggling so much here.
Lance Stroll having a race of it at the moment. Lance Stroll, he's overtaking for fun right now. Fernando Alonso in third. Lance Stroll in fifth place. Gasly Express continuing to motor out there. Valtteri Bottas was ahead over the line. That's no longer the case, and Gasly moves up to 9th position. Well, this is going to be slam dunk stuff on the evidence of the rest of the weekend. Oh, it's not even a contest. Carlos Sainz easing by, and will set off after Lewis Hamilton as well. Carlos Sainz has the run on Lewis Hamilton, pulls out of the slipstream and takes the second Mercedes that he's been trying to overtake as easy as you like as the first. This is Pierre Gasly with his foot pinned to the floor. He dips out of the slipstream and he says, thank you very much. That's not a contest. That is slam dunk Alpine past Mercedes, and they are having a day to forget and then some. Hamilton reporting after being given the hurry up, I am pushing on these tyres. But after just one practice session, you had to lock in your settings the entire weekend. and Mercedes do not have the speed to fight. We'd normally get quite excited on an overtake for an Alpine getting past the Mercedes, but that is not a contest at all. Gasly efficiently getting by.
Russell comes in to end his miserable day after 59 laps.
Yeah, retiring the car after seeing something on the data, risk of imminent failure. George Russell retires from the Sao Paulo Grand Prix. Was going to tumble out of the points anyway. This is the best run so far for Perez. He's deploying everything he's got at this stage of the Grand Prix. Diving to the inside. He's got the inside line. Sergio Perez went brave, went bold, and gets third place in the race.
He'll have to fight back up to turn four, I think, although he's managed to stretch his legs through three. Alonso picks up the DRS, and he can attack again.
How aggressive is Fernando Alonso going to be? Goes for the inside move. It's defensive for Perez, who makes the corner. Here we go. Is there a chance to respond for Fernando Alonso? Forces a defensive move. That's not what Perez needs. If he goes off the racing line, he could be vulnerable to four. And all the while, Max Verstappen is nearly in the final corners of the last lap. Alonso is going to get the run down to turn number four. This is going to be super aggressive between the two of them. Alonso's fought his way back through. What a move, Fernando Alonso, on the last lap. And the crowd absolutely loved it. The old master takes back the place. The current master of every driver in the field, the reigning world champion, is on his way to win number 17 of the season. Max Verstappen wins the Sao Paulo Grand Prix with a superb drive across the line. It will be second place for Lando Norris. But the question mark we have, the question mark that remains, is who will stand on the podium with them? Will it be Fernando Alonso? Will it be Sergio Perez? Perez will try to respond. There's that wide line from the Aston Martin driver time and time again. He will go up through the gears. They're both planted to the floor. And you have just seen a brilliant race from the top two, but it's going to be Fernando Alonso across the line. He gets close. He just hangs on in a superb finish to the line. It was decided for third place by 53 thousandths of a second after an entire Grand Prix distance. And look what it means to Aston Martin.
This is the Outlap F1 podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome in. This is season five. This is episode number 38 of the Outlap F1 podcast. We are proud members of the Ship It Studios podcast network. And this is the 2023 Brazil, I guess don't call it Brazil, but a Sao Paulo something. There was a race in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and we're going to review it. Okay. So that's what this is. You've got Andy, and I'm along with just Deanna tonight. Dee, it's good to see you again. Cody is in the world of the Dungeons and Dragons and monitoring whatever his campaign. And for whatever it is, I don't understand that game necessarily, but I hope whatever it is, he does well. I mean, I hope he dominates. So. Anyway, good luck to Cody tonight. Dee, how's it going on a Sunday night where we change the clocks back, but it feels like nighttime?
Yes, it got dark at about 4 p.m., which was so much fun. This is my favorite time of year after many people told me that we weren't changing the times back this year, but that was all a lie, so I got a little excited for nothing. But yeah, other than that, good weekend, three for three. Looking forward to a little bit of a break.
Yeah, likewise.
Don't know how these teams do this. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we do one recording for every week, and but these guys are doing it, and these guys and gals are doing it like back to back. I don't know how they do it.
It's their whole lives. It has to be your whole entire life.
Calendar is crazy, and I could not imagine trying to manage. It's hard enough managing my own life, but I can't imagine trying to manage like children and family and relatives and other things while being literally half a world away. So again, I guess just first thing, mad respect to everybody who managed to pull off the triple header. And that's probably why you're here, because this is the last leg of that. So if you found us, as David Croft would say, welcome along. We're happy to have you. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and YouTube. At Outlap F1 Podcast is the handle. If you're on YouTube and you like what you're seeing and you like what you're hearing, do us a solid, click the like and subscribe button. If you're on your favorite podcasting app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Casts, whatever, if you click a 5-star button and leave us a review, that will also help us come up a little bit better in search results. Just helps us get our content to you that much quicker. You can email the show anytime you'd like. Chat now at OutlapF1 would take you there. OutlapF1.com. I have a problem of not remembering the .coms. I have to get better at that. The website, www.outlapf1.com, will take you there. As just a reminder and a thank you to all of our monetary supporters who support the show. Thank you so much to Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quinton Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and of course, Jonathan Scott. If you'd like to become a member of what we call the hashtag OutlapF1Nation, you can take a look at our show notes. It's our anchor page, $1, $5, all goes in to buying new equipment, upgrading the equipment we already have. I just found a bit of an end table, so I'm very excited. I bought this arm for like a year ago, and it's been sitting in the box. I'm finally going to hopefully try to get this, so maybe for Vegas, I can podcast on my couch in front of my beautiful Lando painting that I have. Oh, so that's what I'm going to try to do. I'm going to try to set it up for Vegas. Lord knows I'm going to have enough time in the middle of the night not doing anything. So if I'm awake, why not build it? So that's my goal.
You have till 3 a.m.
Exactly. Exactly. So where was I? People who actually pay us to read stuff. The good folks at Manscaped. You can get 20% off and free shipping with our code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP. And our final sponsor, thef1guy.com, our buddy Vincenzo Landino, who might be going to Vegas. And if he is, I appreciate it. He has a shirt line, F1 quality merch at not necessarily the F1 quality price. Just as a reminder, we get to the end of the year. Christmas is coming. It's coming fast. It's kind of scary. So if you want to get some merch for your F1 fan in your life, feel free to check him out. All right. So we will start off, as we are apt to do, with our headline of the day. Dee, I'll let you go first. What you got?
Yeah, I think I thought this was going to come to me, but it didn't. And I think, unfortunately, it was just not the greatest Brazil weekend that there has ever been. But still, it is the greatest track ever. And I think even it being a quote-unquote boring weekend in Brazil, it was still gave us quite a bit to watch and enjoy and some great battles. And excited to get into that.
My headline is, a classic, this wasn't. But boy, did the start and finish live up to those expectations. And I am just so glad that we have drivers who decided, and teams that for a large part went all out today. They didn't necessarily get the results they all wanted, but they went all out, and two of them got on the podium. So, you have the kind of normal service in the front, but after that, wow, there was quite a bit of show going on, and I'm excited to get into all of that. But first, we have a lot of sessions to go through because this is our final sprint weekend of the year. We go back and rewind all the way to Friday afternoon. And we'll have to talk about the weather in a little bit. We talked about this, Cody and I did, in our little short little preview. Boy, did that turn out to be a thing. But here is the result of the session. Going out in P20, the Alfa Romeo. They struggled a lot this weekend. That was Zhao Guanyu. P19 was Logan Sargeant. P18 was Valtteri Bottas. P17 getting caught out a little bit. Daniel Ricciardo in the AlphaTauri, but they would have a better weekend as it moved along. P16 was Yuki Tsunoda in the other AlphaTauri. So, not getting off to a great start in the weekend. P15 was Alex Albon. P14 was Kevin Magnussen. P13 was Pierre Gasly. P12, Esteban Ocon. P11, Nico Hülkenberg. P10 was Oscar Piastri. P9 was Sergio Perez. P8, P8 was Carlos Sainz. P7 was Lando Norris. P6 on the road was George Russell. P5 was the other Mercedes of Lewis Hamilton. P4, hello Aston Martin. Welcome back to the front, Fernando Alonso. P3, hello other Aston Martin, Lance Stroll. How you doing there, sir? P2, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari, but he's inevitable. He just does it. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. Not even his best time of the three sessions. 110.727, but good enough for pole as the weather bared down. Wow. Comments on the qualifying sessions as a whole, then we'll probably just do a separate thing on the weather.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the biggest thing that happened. But going through Q1, Q2, I thought we were going to get an incredibly competitive Q3, which we'll get to in a second. But it was looking like, and at many points of the season, Red Bull was not the dominant car in one lap pace. And there was, especially in the conditions on Friday, it seemed like there was quite a few that could kind of get up in there. Unfortunately, the inevitable happened, and I think that was helped a lot due to the weather, if you'd like to get into that.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, for the first two sessions, McLaren, I think, were the top of the charts, mm-hmm. and they easily looked like they were 2-3 tenths clear in those first couple of sessions, and they were easily able to kind of save tires and do whatever they wanted in terms of strategy to do. They were kind of holding back at the end of Q2, and then you get to Q3, and I watched this a second time because the first time – I thought maybe they completely botched this, but about seven cars all line up at the end of the pit lane to start the session. The weather is coming. The radar looked pretty gnarly. In fact, that is something that I actually kind of want to get into, is maybe they shouldn't have even run this session, but they send the cars out. The first five, I think, were Verstappen, Alonso, Stroll. I can't remember who the other ones, but I think Lando is like sixth or seventh in the line. And then they held Piastri back for about half a minute, about 30 seconds to build the gap. Because now, you know, now we're doing the thing at the end of the pit lane where we're all kind of tripping over each other. And that's where we do it now, because that's what the FIA wants us to do. So, okay, fine. We do that. But meanwhile, this storm is coming from, I think, from west to east. And it's just bearing down on the track. And it got very dark. And the first four or five cars managed to finish their laps. Then what happens before a storm, you get the big wind shift. And the big wind shift happened. And anybody beyond the first four cars all got affected by the wind shift. Lando got affected by it. Oscar ended up having an off. So that caused the yellow flag. That ruined Sergio Perez's lap. Everybody manages to come around. They put a time on the board, but at this point now the rain is here. It's coming. Starts to chuck it down. Lightning, rain, wind. Some of the videos that I've seen after from people who were there was really, really scary. There were roofs blown off. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, they were the temporary kind of roofs and not the permanent type of roof. So it was really just a big, you know, tarp that came off its moorings. And luckily, from everything that I've read, there have been no reports of injuries or anything from that. But what a scary moment. I mean, they're literally trying to figure out where to do the qualifying interviews. They actually stopped the session with 4 minutes to go, and then they just red flagged, and they just said, we're done. We're done. This is not going to improve.
Yeah.
Even if the storm blows over, even though there's 2 hours of daylight, we're not getting back out today. And they actually told the teams, this is a radio message I almost never hear, you can close your garage doors. Because normally, well, once they, you know, they come out, they have to keep the doors open. Well, they were told that that was okay to close them. So crazy, crazy. I don't think that session should have been run. I know in the U.S. Mm-hmm. we have a very clear lightning radius. I think if it's anywhere within 15 miles of a circuit, I was victim to this at Circuit of the Americas once in the 2015 race that poured down, and we were actually pretty lucky to have it, because by the time they got us cleared, the sky opened up and it got gnarly. And the thing with being out on a racetrack, there's nowhere to freaking go. You got to go whatever structure you have. Fortunately, I was able to take cover in the main grandstand. But if you're in one of those upper grandstands, and of course you're paying more to sit higher, you're a sitting duck, so
I'm just exposed.
Yes, I mean, wow. So, Dee, what's your thought on all this? I kind of laid out my case, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think. Well, I've never really seen clouds roll in like that. Like, it looked almost apocalyptic. Like, that was pretty insane. Just seeing that, and it absolutely chucked it down. So, yeah, I'm kind of with you. They probably could have got it off. I think they were able to get everyone around safely and put that session in. I think that would have been more of a drama later on about when are we going to do this and blah, 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 blah. But it was whoever got out kind of first or second, which that was what Max did, got in, he put his lap in. It wasn't great, but he was out there before everybody else. And that was what you needed to do in that session with the weather, what was coming. And so unfortunately, the guys that probably could have outpaced him didn't get the chance to do so. So here we are.
Yeah, I literally went, oh, again, I've said this too many times. What could have been? Because it was there, and I'm not one I'm not one to try to get cryptic. I don't usually put out cryptic tweets. I just happened to see this in my timeline. And as soon as I read it, I wish I hadn't read it. And somebody had commented, wasn't even one of our followers, I think. It's just somebody said, this is Lando's to lose. And I went, oh, no. Oh, no. And as soon as I saw that, I just, you know, like this is like the third time. The raid gods owe this guy a pole position or a result at some point. So you got to think it's going to flip back. But
I was thinking about this. I don't think Lando has a whole ton of bad luck. He has had a lot of bad luck. But, like, I think he just doesn't get a lot of, like, crazy good luck either that has lent itself to some of these people getting race wins and stuff, like, think Gasly or Ocon or anything like those. Like, he just doesn't get that kind of thing, too. Like, when they hung him out today, and, like, maybe there's a safety car that's coming out, it just doesn't seem to happen for him. But hopefully, as that car gets more competitive, maybe next year he'll get on pace. And yeah, we'll talk about one more later. But yeah, it's just like, come on. You see him go first, he gets pole. It's just like every single time you're just like, please. Like, I've seen it. I just need something else, please.
Oh, you didn't want to know what I was uttering because I was trying to balance that while I was working and tweeting at the same time. So I'm like, okay, I have to be calm. I can't go off on a tangent, but I'm like, the part that actually annoyed me more than anything was if they didn't have the debris delay in the first 15 minutes, because the whole session got, we're never here. So I don't know what caused that. I would like that circuit to invest in a blower or a jet thing or something, because you had marshals out there and the marshals are doing the best that they can. I get it. You know, that's a voluntary job, and kudos to everybody who chooses to do that for the weekends. You don't have races without good marshalling, and they were doing a great job, but they were doing a great job with equipment that they're doing it with brooms. And it's like, well, really, you can't get a jet dryer to go around once and blow all that crap off, but whatever. I guess I just have to check it up to, it just was that sport. So anyway, I'm done ranting about it. We got redemption in the sprint shootout, if nothing else. So we flip over to Saturday. So Saturday morning, we had the sprint shootout, and in P20 was Logan Sargeant in the Williams. P19 was Alex Albon in the other Williams. P18, Joe Granu in the Alfa Romeo. P17, fall from yesterday, Lance Stroll in the Aston Martin. P16, Esteban Ocon in the Alpine. Advancing through to the SQ2 in P15, he did not get a chance to set a time because he had a run-in with that Esteban Ocon. Fernando Alonso in the other Aston Martin. P14 was Valtteri Bottas. P13 was Pierre Gasly. P12, Nico Hülkenberg. P11, almost making SQ3, Kevin Magnussen in the other Haas. The top 10 from 10 to 1. P10, Oscar Piastri. P9, Carlos Sainz. P8, Daniel Ricciardo. So better form there. P7, Charles Leclerc. P6, Yuki Tsunoda. Again, both AlphaTauris making the top 10 here. P5, Lewis Hamilton. P4, George Russell. P3, Sergio Checo Perez. P2, Max Verstappen in the Red Bull, and P1, making up for his unfortunate Friday, Lando Norris in the McLaren on sprint pole. All right, Dee, thoughts on the SQ sessions?
Yes, I think, well, there's quite a bit to talk about here, but I'll start with the, I think this is where the tires really started to come into play, and the lack of tires for the sprint weekend, and how poor the hards were. And so the teams were really struggling with their allocations between the mediums and the softs. So I think that was especially evident in SQ3. You had guys with two sets of soft tires, but I think at that moment we didn't realize everybody was just holding on for dear life to those tires for this, the sprint and the race itself. And so we were expecting a couple people to do two runs. But I think that kind of led us to a less competitive session than we would have seen in normal Q3, because the app at the front was just for Verstappen and Norris with new tires. But I think, A, very impressive, Perez being less than a tenth off of Verstappen on used tires. That is, I think, one of the standouts there for me. And then, as well, Lando getting pole. But, yeah. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, Lando getting pole on a lap that did not look very, very clean.
Oh, he was not happy.
And he was not happy, and I couldn't help but agree with him, because they were the second, both Oscar and Lando were the first two cars out. So whatever mistakes they made on Friday, they were not repeating on Saturday. So they were going to get out and they were going to get their lap in regardless of the weather, even though the weather was fine. And it was just, if anything, it was just very hot. Oscar had a use, was down to a used set because he had used a set of softs in the practice session where Lando didn't. So Oscar's time is on a used set and was reflective of that. Lando has a moment. I would call it a moment and even maybe a moment and a half coming out of the Senna S's. Okay. And I looked at the lap time and I'm looking at the first sector and he's 3/10 down. I'm like, well, all right. Well, that was fun while it lasted. But something bad happens to that guy. He just goes to work. His second and third sectors were absolutely amazing. He blitzes the second sector. He blitzes the third sector, which is where McLaren had been saying all weekend that was where they were going to struggle, but apparently not in the lap time. And he crosses the line, and now you're waiting. You know, usually he's one of the last ones to cross, and you kind of know where he's going to be. But I'm watching the timing, and like, all right, here comes Sainz. No. Here comes Russell. No. Hamilton. No. Verstappen. Not enough. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is actually going to happen. And meanwhile, Lando has now started to beat on himself coming back to the pits. And he's like, I think his actual quote was, why am I so shit in qualifying? And his engineer goes, mate, I'll come back to you. And oh yeah, that's P1. And by the time he comes all the way back around, he's like, what? Okay. Sure. I guess I go here now. So where do I go? So it was probably the most Lando way to get a pole if he's ever going to get one. It's just kind of how he goes. But again, something bad happens. That guy just goes to work. And that's when the great came out in those last two sectors because he absolutely nailed them. Other things, better showing for the AlphaTauris for sure. Ferrari, mm-hmm. Mercedes kind of flipping fortunes around. That would flip again in the races itself. And Aston Martin, you know, where did that go in this session, even though their race pace and everything else was pretty strong? So, you know, very
well, for one car, it went into the side of Ocon. That's so true.
Yeah, I mean, Fernando does not have any love for his old team, I don't think, anymore. I think he even said, when you see the blue, you have to brace yourself. I think was partly what his post-race comment was, and we all kind of know what blue he was talking about. And then, ironically enough, they lined up neck and neck for the sprint. And I guess now this is as good a time as any. We will get into that sprint. So the top 20, all of the finishers, everybody finished on the lead lap. So P20 was Logan Sargeant, P19, Valtteri Bottas, P18, Nico Hülkenberg, P17, João Grandjean, P16, Kevin Magnussen, P15, Alex Albon, P14, Esteban Ocon, P13, Pierre Gasly, P12, Lance Stroll, P11, good recovery for him here for both Aston Martins from up from where they qualified. P10, Oscar Piastri. P9, Daniel Ricciardo, just missing out on sprint points. The points finishers were Carlos Sainz in P8, Lewis Hamilton in P7, Yuki Tsunoda in P6. Big points for AlphaTauri there. P5 was Charles Leclerc. P4, George Russell. P3 was Sergio Perez. P2, unable to hold the position at the start, Lando Norris. And in P1, he just happens again, Max Verstappen in the Red Bull, just driving away.
Constant. It's constant.
Yeah. you want to talk about the start real quick, and then we'll talk about other stuff.
Yeah, so, well, at the start, it seemed like Lando got a great launch off the line, and then Max just completely outdrove him down into turn one. And so I think he did luckily learn some lessons the next day, and we'll talk about that. But I think any kind of chance at a fight was lost there. And then he did get caught napping by Russell, was able to get him back. I think, though, overall, as we're kind of on Norris here, for most of it, he was staying in about 2.5 seconds. And I think for that long of a stint was really promising. It wasn't until the last few laps where I think his tire started to fall off and Max can just kind of keep going into infinity. so just kind of kept going. But I think kind of the bigger standout performance from this race, like outside of the front couple, it was really close in the back and even outside of the points. And they were fighting for it, and that was awesome. But I think especially the AlphaTauris kind of showed that Mexico wasn't such a flash in the pan. And hopefully this is turning a corner for them. So Yuki getting P6, I think he was pretty close to Leclerc at the end there. And the last lap of Ricciardo on Sainz, they didn't obviously show most of it because I had to show Max like 20 seconds away and all that, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. But I watched that on board, and he fought for that. at the end. So it's just fun to see those guys kind of get a bit of a turnaround here at the end of the season. So,
yeah, I mean, it wasn't like a classic sprint, but it was a good sprint. And the sprint just tends to work here. And it's one of the few tracks that does – the thing with the DRS zones is that they flip over. And a lot of times you see tracks that have two DRS zones but only one detection point. And it's really almost like this is probably how DRS is supposed to work. You should have it, and then it should go to the guy immediately behind so he can try to fight back and see if you could have things. So you would have moves happen into the Senna S's and then turn around as they were going down that straight into turn four there. So, yeah, a lot of back and forth, good hand-to-hand fighting, very clean stuff. Nobody, I think, it did anybody dirty here. So a lot of fun there. A lot of fun in the midfield, definitely, for sure. You know, with respect to Lando – got a good start, just didn't get the best second part of it. And he didn't do the Leclerc versus Max move like we saw at Coda. He didn't try to cut him off. And then, George, early pace on the Mercedes, early stint part of the stint, able to jump him. Lando's down to P3. A couple laps later, he gets DRS, gets back into P2, went back, got into rhythm. There's one lap, I think it's lap 16 or 17, where he gets tantalizingly close to Max's DRS. I think he even asked what the gap was, and they came back and said it was 1.2. And then after that, I think I even said Max just does Max things, put the hammer down and said, yeah, that was nice. Goodbye. Yep. And then, you know, puts in 3-4 laps that just nobody else had the tire life like Max in that Red Bull does. It's just plain and simple. But, yeah, I mean, I thought overall, though, a decent sprint race. It always tends to work here. I think I've also said I'm pretty sure Brazil, as long as they continue to do sprints, whatever iteration we end up getting, and there's a lot of talk of they're going to change some of the format. It looks like what we're going to probably end up with is sprint qualifying now on Friday as opposed to the Grand Prix qualifying, do the sprint on Saturday, and then don't institute Park for May until going into the Grand Prix qualifying, which would happen Saturday afternoon. I think it fixes a lot of it. I don't know that I love it, but Dee, what's your thought on the proposal that it looks like is probably going to get voted on?
It's a step in, I guess, the right direction. I mean, it's not a step backwards. It might just be a lateral, but when we're all said and done, but it's just, I just don't know what their end goal is. Like, I think it's just, I know they're just kind of throwing stuff at the wall, and in some ways that's entertaining, but I just don't feel like we all have a clear direction, and there's nobody that's like dying to have these in any way. So it's just like, okay, you can try it. I just like, don't add more. And also space them out more, because this has been really heavy sprint races these last three, four races. So, maybe just calm down on those a little bit. But, yeah. I mean, I think, like, well, I kind of like the idea of it not being parked for May. I think, kind of two examples. One, Mercedes, I think, got spooked after the Coda weekend. Probably didn't run their cars low. They had a whole host of issues. So I think the lack of practice time hurts. And then, like, Ricardo, he said that after FP1 wasn't happy with the setup, completely changed it before qualifying. So that first qualifying session just had to go with it. And I think I would assume Tsunoda was probably the same. In that first qualifying, they were terrible, came back in sprint qualifying, much more used to the setup at that point, and kind of gets to go from there. So I think even having a qualifying session and a race session, they'll really be able to change and tune their cars for qualifying in the race. So, I mean, I guess maybe that'll help differ. Like, we won't just be seeing kind of similar pace, similar everything. Maybe some problems can get fixed, and that'll lead to some differences between the sprint race and the actual race. I think my biggest thing that I like out of here is the change of park for May. It's the moral of the story. A lot of words to get to that.
Yeah, the one thing that they're not addressing, which I wish they would, is the tires. The whole thing with a sprint is you're starting one set down because you don't have the other practice. And that just seems, you're still going to have guys, you're still going to have teams and drivers doing games with the tires. Like, when you got to Saturday, because, like you said earlier, the soft was the tire that everybody wanted. That turned out to be the race preferred tire, which almost never happens. So you had that kind of oddity you know, creep up. And then you had guys going out and sprint qualifying on used sets because that was the only way that they wanted to keep new sets for the race. Some people wanted to have new sets for the sprint if that was their best chance to make hay. You had other guy, you had other drivers holding back sets for the race itself, which, again, you almost never see that. So the first thing that I would try to address is let's make sure we have enough tires. If we're going to run sprint Q1, sprint Q2, sprint Q3, let's have enough tires there so that these guys, so that everybody can have and do the strategy that they want. Because if they're not able to push, what's the point of them being out there? And then you get, you know, times that aren't even, you know, Piastri in 10th. We never know what he could have done. He was up, I think, second or third in sprint Q2 on the medium tire, but it didn't matter because he had no new sets of softs and he was going up against guys that had newer sets of softs. There was no way he was going to do basically any better than he did, as it kind of turned out. So, yeah, I mean, to me, that's, if you're going to change the order, yeah, the order I think makes sense. It's back to kind of a natural build. I don't love the fact of trying to get up for a sprint in the morning at some of these, especially European venues, because the sprint qualifying in, in Baku, the first time we did it was like at 3 something in the morning.
Yeah.
My time. So that was really annoying. So I don't know if I want to do that. I will, because I'm crazy, but that's just me. But most fans, most U.S. fans, I don't think you're going to want to do that. So it helps. I think it's a step in the right direction. I don't know that I love it, but I think that's probably what we're going to end up getting. I've not heard any, I've seen any other ideas out there that seems that has gained any traction. So we will monitor it and, as always, report on it when we can. All right. So now we will flip to the Sunday race back to So pick up from where the qualifying left off on Friday. Boy, we had a lot of non-finishers in this race. Our entire back markers basically is all but two, and even they were caught up in it. Charles Leclerc, he gets the dreaded, did not start. A crash on the formation lap, hydraulic failure leads to his car going into the wall, unable to recover. Even though he did get it going again, it wasn't in good enough shape. He pulled over, and that was the end of his day. Alex Albon, Kevin Magnussen were the lap one kerfuffle, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. Joe Granju and Valtteri Bottas each had separate failures related to the Alfa Romeo camp. George Russell in the Mercedes. This was kind of a surprise, just bad pace. And then I think he just continued to fall. And I figured they probably said, your day, we've done enough. So we might as well put you out of the misery there. Oscar Piastri gets probably the "you went out and tried" award, if nothing else, because he got involved in the melee in turn one. His car was very badly damaged, but because of a red flag, was able to at least get back out there, but he wasn't able to be pretty competitive after that. And plus, he was caught a lap down, something I do kind of want to talk about. And the other finisher in the back markers, Daniel Ricciardo, he had a bit of a scary moment where a tire goes about maybe 4 feet from his head, hit his rear wing in that lap one incident, breaking the rear wing. He was able to fix the car. Again, he ended up a lap down, and basically there was no other incidents after that, so they could not recover the lap or get back basically into the main race. So let's talk about that lap one incident. D, what'd you see, and how'd you see it?
Three doesn't go into one, and that is a lap one incident. So I think K-Mag kind of cut across Hulk, and then Hulk into Albon. Albon comes across, hits K-Mag. They both go flying. They tag the back of Piastri. His rear wing gets broken, along with some other stuff. Tire goes flying, hits the rear wing of Ricciardo. So then right there, you have two cars out, two cars that should have been out, minus the red flag, and then Hulkenberg that... he got fixed in the pit lane as well, so another car that potentially could have been out. And that was just from one little incident. And then, not to mention, and then you have three Ferrari engines going kaput to add to all of that. So,
yeah, I mean, and add to that, you had Carlos Sainz coming on the radio saying, "I never want to touch this clutch again." Leclerc was being intentionally vague in his responses, even though the team has come out and said it was a hydraulic failure, but it may have had some other gremlins in it. We know that they were on kind of their last engines of their allocation and were just kind of trying to get to the end. Maybe we found something where like this was finally the last thing that did it for Ferrari powered teams. We don't know what the Haases would have done if not for the incidents there. But yeah, I mean, just an absolute kerfuffle at the start, I guess is the way to call it, beyond the first three rows. And yeah, Oscar's kind of the unlucky of the unlucky because he had nothing to do with it. He just got clipped. So they ended up with all the debris and everything, they ended up having to put out a red flag. Strange that they didn't try to count back scoring. And we've talked about this many times about how they first went to a safety car and the safety car goes out and basically then completes a lap. They drove everybody through the pit lane and then they red flagged it. So because they come around, now all the timing and scoring is reset, meaning that now Piastri and Ricciardo, like Piastri thought he was out of the race. McLaren thought he was done and out of the race and just said, bring the car back in. We're going to box you and you're going to hop out. And same thing probably with Danny. And then all of a sudden they go red flag, red flag. Well, you can fix a car in a red flag. We've already got the car here. Why not at least try to see if we can put things back together? And they do enough to get them back out there, enough to be kind of competitive on pace, but not really. But when you're a lap down, you're basically in a race of two at that point. So I give both Piastri and Ricciardo marks for finishing the race. I'm surprised neither team tried to send them back in. Particularly with engine mileage getting higher and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, it was just, I was surprised that they didn't have some sort of a mechanism for count back or anything else. But again, like you said, once they threw the safety car out, what else are they going to do?
Yeah. Well, I think that they had, cause it started lap three and the restart would have been on four. So I think they did one full lap in the safety car in through the pit lane. So then they went into the garage. But what I don't get in what they've done in the past, which I guess it was because they were fully in the garage. And so this now makes it a different situation because it feels like every time we have a red flag, we have some to figure out some new rule. But like they have in the past, if somebody had been lapped already in the race and a red flag comes around, they let those cars go first, pick them back up on the quote unquote formation lap, and then you go. So why they didn't just let Ricciardo and Piastri go, lap come around, and then we all just basically restart, even if they start from the pit lane. At least everybody's on the same lap. Like, if you're going to let them restart, I feel like that's not
right.
any different than losing a lap in the race. But I guess if they've been in the garage, this now makes it a different situation.
I guess that's what, from what I've read, that's the determining factor, was the fact is that as soon as they pulled the car in the garage, had they done those repairs in the pit lane? Had they just stopped him in the middle of the pit lane and looked really stupid for a minute, maybe that lets him back in and lets them back in and able then to do that. Mm-hmm. But because they had to pull, like, again, they both thought they were out. So, you know, it was kind of like, oh, well, we're back from the dead a little bit here. But, you know, I wish there would have been a mechanism because we really only had like 500 meters of actual racing.
You know? Well, I mean, this is my eternal annoyance where it takes so long for them to decide these things. And this is, again, it popped up on the message. The reason that they're red flagging is to test the structural integrity of the barrier. It is very obvious when you see that barrier mangled, like, it's going to take a minute. So, anyway.
Yeah.
If they just called a red flag, like, right when they came back in the pits, like, we would have all been fine. Right. But whatever.
Yeah. So, anyway. So, we ended up basically now resetting, restarting. And the big winner of actually all that were two. Well, one was Lando Norris because he went from P6 to P2 on just an app. Like, he didn't nail the start on Saturday. He nailed the start on Sunday, man. Woo-hoo. Using that inside line, getting around both Alonso, who was very racy today, and Lance Stroll, and keeping Lewis Hamilton at bay at that time. Heck of a move there. So he based, now we get the restart that we all wanted, at least we all thought we wanted. It was like, okay, here's number two with Lando now on the inside, not quite able to get there when we restarted. He did have DRS at one point. We actually did see him get a move up into turn four. Was not enough, however, in order to get him into P1. And then Max kind of starts to do Max things. But anyway, we should go back into the midfield where there was lots of action here. Finishing P12, Nico Hülkenberg in the Haas. P11, just missing out on points. This is three solid races in a row for this guy. I don't know how, you know, what your thoughts on it, but we'll have to talk about it. Logan Sargeant in the Williams. P10, Esteban Ocon. P9, Yuki Tsunoda. More good points for AlphaTauri here. P8, Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes, the only finishing Mercedes. P7, Pierre Gasly. P6 was Carlos Sainz, P5, Lance Stroll in the Aston Martin, and P4 and P3 probably should talk it together. P4 was Sergio Perez, not very far away from P3, Fernando Alonso and the other Aston Martin, probably the moments of the race. The battle between the two of them late was top-notch all the way around. That's all I will say about it. The racecraft between the two of them, the fact that it was 0.053 seconds at the line, pretty damn amazing stuff. Dee, what you think about the midfield?
Yeah, so I guess starting from the back, we'll talk about Logan Sargeant briefly. I think a decent race from him. He actually was flattered by the red flag because he started on the mediums. He was the only one to do that. And then got his medium stint out of the way and could run softs the rest of the way. So I think that helped him. And I mean, granted, there were quite a few retirements, but again, finishing 11th, I think that's about where that car was at this weekend. I don't think they had a whole ton of pace. And so again, this is another week, quiet, put his head down, just doing what he needs to do. So.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know that this is enough that I would say, well, he now therefore deserves to keep his drive and all that other stuff. I don't know that, but from where he's been, where, you know, with Williams mechanics, I mean, contrast where he was in Japan, where the Williams mechanics were pretty much ready to leave him at the airport, I'm pretty sure by the end of that race, to where he is now, it's an improvement. I don't know, like I said, I don't know that it's enough that I'm not ready to say, therefore he should keep it, but at least he's proving that he's serviceable. If nothing else, I think it's probably secured him a reserve drive somewhere if nobody else wants to pick him up, because he's definitely useful and he's definitely decent enough at wheeling around a car to where he's going to be able to still be around this sport, whether or not he's not going to get banished out. Like, I don't see him going to WEC or I don't see him going to IndyCar, particularly because the IndyCars are out of that merry-go-round is kind of stopped, and WEC look like, you know, they're pretty much set on where they're going to be, at least for the time being. So I do think that it's at least enough of an improvement to keep him around, if nothing else.
Okay, great.
Thoughts on, I guess we can't really go forward without talking about the Mercedes. Boy, bad call, bad pace all weekend. Lewis Hamilton ruining the W14, Mercedes fans, Lewis fans, all up in a roar. Toto Wolff, not happy. I'm sure if there was a desk around, it probably got hit today. Bad setup looked like, and no straight line speed.
They just sunk like rocks. And Crafty kept saying that it looked like there was a parachute on that thing, and it did. Like, they would have DRS, and they would still be feeling like they were going backwards on cars that didn't. It was just painful to watch, especially after the past couple weeks where it seems like they had made such a leap. Like, they had started to figure out this car, they'd started to understand it, and it just absolutely collapsed this week. And they had really no idea what was going on. They kind of just tripped over each other for a while there at the beginning. George was just getting upset and then just dropped off to nowhere eventually. And so it was just an absolute mess. And I mean, like, he had a great start on the first one, not before the red flag. Lewis did, and you thought they might go somewhere, but it just bad, all around bad. And it really was a kind of wild weekend where it just feels like Aston Martin Mercedes just flipped. Kind of the issues Aston Martin has been plagued with in the last couple weeks just were given to Mercedes. and they just couldn't figure it out.
Here, you take these upgrades. We don't want them. I mean, for Aston Martin, I guess it was really moving forward by moving back, because they basically took those entire huge upgrades that they've invested a lot into and took them off the car and said, okay, we're going to go back to kind of base setup, back to kind of where we were even at the beginning of the season. And that kind of built it up. And you can tell what happens when a driver starts to get confident, you know, and it wasn't like they weren't ridiculous on pace, but they were solid. Like, I almost expected them to kind of drop. I'm like, okay, well, the qualifying thing, they read the weather and they deserve what they get because they were the first out there, and that's fine. But I didn't expect it to be sustained. And then when they dropped into the sprint qualifying, I'm like, okay, maybe this is really more where they're at. But they showed really good pace in the sprint. They rallied up to be just kind of on the outside of the points. And here they were, for the most part, able to hold their positions. And both of them did it. So, I mean, it was really good for a team that's been through, you know, had three or four weekends in a row that they just wanted to forget. A bit of light on them. And maybe it's, maybe they figured some stuff out, and maybe they can put it a direction in for next year, because that's where I think the big issue is they thought they were going down a development path. They obviously had to stop it. But at least they figured out we can still be fast. If nothing else, it'd still be good enough.
At least they did start the season at a good place, and they have at least a decent base point, even if this upgrade package just went absolutely horribly wrong. But it was good to see them turn around, and I think especially Stroll, who has had a real big disaster in the last, let's call it, 5-6 races. It has had mixed incidents and such. I mean, probably good for him and his confidence in the team that seemed to be in peril recently, especially with certain rumors going on. So, yeah, good for them overall. Good for Stroll. I'll say that.
Rumors that I have done a lot of digging to try to find out what was real and what wasn't there. So one of my trusted sources is Chris Medland, who's usually in the paddock. He's very plugged in. He does several different shows throughout the course of the week. And he actually mentioned the now infamous tweet, of which the author of said tweet has since apologized for. Apparently, what that was referring to was something related to Sergio Perez. It wasn't necessarily that Perez was going to lose his drive. It wasn't necessarily that he was being replaced. But that's what he didn't want to get into. He didn't believe it. But he puts out this cryptic tweet, and then, you know, the F1 universe did its thing and kind of went all crazy. And so we had crazy rumors of Lawrence Stroll selling Aston Martin, Fernando Alonso leaving Aston Martin and going to Red Bull, that Perez had lost his drive and had been fired after the Mexican Grand Prix weekend in the paddock. You know, everybody who had a crackpot theory this week all came to the front. And you couldn't believe any of it. So I'm pretty sure now the Aston Martin situation can calm down. I'm pretty sure Fernando's going to be in the car again next year. He may make me a liar at the end of the season, but at least for now, I think we're kind of settled there. But let's talk about the highlight of the ending. Sergio Perez versus Fernando Alonso in a ding-dong. That if that's for P1, we're talking about this race for years. We may be talking about this race for a couple years even with this. But it was for P3 on the podium. D, take us through what you saw, and wow, what a battle.
I mean, it went on for, I mean, it feels like well into that second stint. I think Perez was gaining on him. He was in 2 seconds for a long time, and you felt like he was just going to kind of rock up to the back of him and pass him. But I think Perez had pitted earlier. He had taken out a lot of the life in his tires coming from further back. And so Fernando held him off in that kind of end of that second stint. And then the third stint, again, Perez gets closer and closer and closer, and you just think it's inevitable. But somehow Alonso held on all through that last stint. He was just taking crazy lines, forcing Perez to essentially just get bad exits or not anything that was going to get him, allow him the opportunity to overtake him. He was probably within a second for like 10 laps or so. That may be wrong, correct me. but it was just crazy. And I think you never see defending like that. And it was just really just such high level thinking from Alonso the entire time. And just anticipating what Perez was going to do, what the impact the line he took would have on Perez, where Perez, like, it's just incredible how smart he is and still continues to be. And he really is one of the best drivers to ever do it. He just unfortunately has not been in the right car for a very, very long time. But yeah, it's awesome. So second and last lap, Perez gets around into turn one, doesn't get the best exit into the S's. Alonso comes back in that second overtaking zone to see the DeLago, and then just tries to outdrag him to the line, and it's a half a tenth, and it just nuts. Just such great driving, and one of those battles you'll never forget. Akin to, and I'm going to mess this up, what is it, Arnoux in the 70s?
Oh, yeah. That's one
and
of those.
Villeneuve. Yep. It was the battle for second. Yep. that was kind of one of the all-time greats, and I think that like goes up there. Battle for second, this is a battle for third, so similar vein.
Yeah, I mean, the end, I mean, if the start-finish line is not right where it is, Sergio Perez is on the podium, just because of the DRS and the power of the DRS and where all of that is going to be. But the move and the counter move and all of that, and Alonso, I say this all the time, you give that guy a sniff at a battle, and it's just something comes alive in that dude. And it did. And he defended like the lion, you know, like that's what he says other people should do that. And he just does what he says mm-hmm. he's going to do. And it was great to watch. Unfortunately, because it was coming down to the end. And of course you have to do the shot of the winner and the guy who finishes in second. And then you get this, you know, you don't get to see it. And the camera angle was also didn't capture it really well because there's a beam right on the start finish line that's blocking your view, which is just absolute insanity why you would put a camera there. But there were some fan videos of crossing the line. They are absolutely neck and neck. This is mm-hmm. what you get in Brazil. It reminded me of the Gasly Hamilton thing from a couple years ago. This is maybe even better. It's probably even closer. 0.053 seconds, the delta. There's certain angles that make it look like that Perez got him, and there's other angles that make it definitely look like Alonso got him. The computers kind of took over and kind of told us what happened. The reaction of the Aston Martin garage, that's why we do this, for that moment, mm-hmm. for to watch that release on a team that, again, had some really tough times. Like, this is a team that had lost over 120 points to their rival McLaren in the last month and a half after thinking that they were more than safe in P4. But to go backward, to go forward, great battle. Oh, by the way, Sergio Checo Perez, welcome back to actual racing yet again. Not mired in the midfield, able to get out, use his pace. Realized, I think he forgot like he was driving a Red Bull but until like this weekend because there it was again. Maybe what you could have seen had he survived the lap one thing last weekend. But I think that now will hopefully put the P2 thing to bed. Looks like he now can clinch in Vegas. That will hopefully put his future discussion to bed. And we can all kind of move forward from all of that, which is just, you know, watching a guy just get under pressure and just, if nothing else, I hope for the next 2 weeks, Helmut Marko doesn't say a goddamn word to any publication because that dude, he's fine. And that was a great moment. That was probably, to me, the moments of the race was watching that battle because out front it was a race of two. There were two. It just wasn't really, mm-hmm. really, really close. Lando Norris and Max Verstappen were pretty much clear of the field. We talked about the red flag restart. Lando got a decent restart, tried to get up on the inside, just Max around the outside. He did at one point get into the DRS and we were able to see it. And he comes into that turn four and tries to make a move on the outside, and Max just had enough. And every time Lando would get close, Max would just put a little more hammer down and just extend enough. The one thing Max did not get was the fastest lap. And the Lando lap, when he comes out of the pits, after you thought for a minute maybe they were going to hang him out and try to extend that medium stint all the way to the end, because I'm thinking about it, there was like 10 laps left, and he hadn't boxed yet, and he's got an 8-second lead. And I'm like, you can lose up to second a lap, but you're probably losing a second and a half. And
he was losing at least two.
Yeah,
at that point.
I was going to say, like, you thought about it for a half a second. And I'm like, no, be rational, get him in. So Lando comes out, he's like 13, 14 seconds down, and he just threw the car around that lap and did a quali lap and just said, if nothing else, I'm faster in at least over one lap today, this weekend. So the right guy probably got the fastest lap. It was a great lap. And then after that, the team kind of told him, can you please cool the car down? We really just want to get it home now.
Yep. I will say, though, I think over the course of after the first three laps, a green flag race to finish within 10 seconds, I think it's like 8.2. I think that is a vast improvement over anybody the course of the season. So, we're getting there. Slowly but surely, we're getting there.
Yeah, I mean, I've had this envision of Max Verstappen in a boxing ring all by himself with nobody around and no crowd in the arena. And I think Lando Norris is at least on the outskirts of the ring now. Mm-hmm. He's definitely not an opponent. He's not in the ring. He's not able to go, you know, tit for tat. But what he can do, he can be a foil. He can make Max earn it. If Max screws something up, Lando's going to be hopefully there. He was definitely there this weekend to try to pounce on it. So we'll have to see. You know, they're going to Vegas. I don't think that's going to be that doesn't scream McLaren track, sure. You know, right off the bat. But who knows? They didn't think they were going to be good here. Maybe Abu Dhabi. I don't know. I think their big step is going to come next year.
Yes, I agree. But Vegas, I'm fascinated by, mostly because it's going to be cold. At that time of night in the desert, I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen because that is not the conditions they are used to racing these cars in. And I think it's just going to be at least fascinating from that perspective. But because they decided to race this race in the middle of the night for all of us. So great. Thank you very much. At least maybe it'll be interesting.
Oh, I mean, when we go to do our preview, I have several rants about this.
Yep.
That are coming. I'm just gonna have it ready to go, from the price of the dang tickets to what it's done to the locals. I've read a lot of kind of weird, disturbing things that Liberty had tried to do and tried to strong arm and couldn't get away with, and then had to back down on. You know, with venues that have already been there and are established, and they tried to come in and strong arm casinos. When's the last time you heard anybody coming into Las Vegas and trying to strong arm a casino? Makes things that make you go, Anyway, so tune into our preview in a week and a half. I've got a whole lot of things that I've been researching about this Vegas race. So it'll be a little spicy, if nothing else.
Excited to listen to that.
So yeah, Cody doesn't know what he's in for.
Yeah.
Cody does not know what he's in for when I go to do the track preview on this, because there's been a lot of content. I mean, if you're anywhere out on, you know, any sort of independent social media or you know, other YouTubes that are out there about this race, about anybody who lives there, it reminds me that, you know, street races take 2 months to set up, mm-hmm. and now Las Vegas just learned what a street race really is. But anyway, I will leave that there. So that's kind of the end of the rundown for the race itself. We're going to take a quick break. We will re-rack. We will get into where the drivers and the constructors shake out. We've got some good fan emails. We've got some new contributors. Again, I always love to see that. So thank you very much for everybody who chimed in. We'll react to that. We'll hand out some awards. We'll talk about predictions. They're bad, but they could have been great. If not for the damn weather, they could have been really great. But anyway, we'll come back. We'll get into all that in just a little bit.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop.
Welcome back in. This is season 5. This is episode number 38 of the Outlap F1 podcast. As always, we are proud members of the Ship It Studios podcast network, and we just wrapped up our review of the Brazil GP weekend. You've got Andy, and I'm along with Deanna tonight. And so we're going to take a look at where all the points shake out after this race. So, Dee, I'll let you take the drivers, and then I'll chime in with the teams.
So Verstappen is still our world champion. He has passed the 500 point mark and he is now on 524. Less than half the points behind is now his teammate on 258, and he has extended his lead over Lewis Hamilton in third on 226. Fernando Alonso, after his podium, retakes sole fourth in the championship with 198, followed by Lando Norris, who jumps up to fifth on 195, and Carlos Sainz falls back two places to sixth at 192. Seventh is Leclerc on 170. Eighth is Russell on 156. Ninth is Piastri on 87th. And now 10th is Lance Stroll on 63, passing Pierre Gasly for 10th.
Yeah, again, that P10 spot in the drivers, very, very spicy. Can Lando Norris get all the way to fourth? We'll have to see. That may not be it looked like it was going to kind of be almost a fait accompli thing. Not so much anymore.
Only 3 points.
Yeah, I know. It's only 3 points. But that him and Alonso may have some scrapping to do over that if it comes down to that.
And Sainz, if Ferrari can get out of their own way.
Exactly. That's always what we're saying about them. But anyway, yeah. With the teams, Red Bull Racing powertrains in a universe, in a dimension all their own, 782 points. Yowzas. P2 is Mercedes, not even half that many. 382 points is where they check in. Third place is Ferrari with 362. Fourth place is McLaren up to 282. Fifth place is Aston Martin. They come in with up to 261. Sixth place, Alpine. They go up to 108. Seventh place, Williams. They remain on 28. Eighth place, AlphaTauri. They close that gap. Now it's only 7 points to 21. Ninth place, Alfa Romeo. Check in with 16. And 10th place, Haas Ferrari. They check in with 12. All right. So we will now... We've heard our takes on the race weekend. We will now open it up to our favorite segment, the fan email segment. We've got some good contributors in this week. We start with somebody a little bit different. I have to call him out. I didn't know one, it's great that we have fans, but two, I didn't know that they were technically sort of racing each other, or at least one knows and one doesn't. But the formula asked, did I beat Rachel Fleming to the send button today? And he did. So we get to do his first because he won the race, if there is a race. Now watch. Okay. Rachel will now send it with 4 laps to go because I think that's just kind of how she is. But anyway, Dee, it's your time to shine. Take it away.
All right. So starting with the formula, says 6 retirements in this Grand Prix. That's tough to swallow. As a result, the race felt about as bare and shallow as Brundle's interview with Machine Gun Kelly. I felt embarrassed in the comfort of my own living room watching that. Days like today make me really hope we get another team, Andretti, in the mix competing. All that aside, I still think Brazil is one of the best circuits on the calendar. One snoozer here and there is acceptable. I still got my dream of podium of Max, Lando, and Fernando. You got a feel for Aussie fans, though, watching their boys finish the last of all the remaining cars. Yeah, it was the Aussie bowl in the back. Pull that down.
And with like semi-disabled cars. So you have no way of knowing who was actually better or not. Interesting thing, because now I have to try to follow both McLarens on board because they're both definitely worthy of it. The Oscar onboard camera did not work. In fact, I even messaged the F1 TV help about it, and they said, and this was during the red flag, and they responded back to me, and they said, well, if Oscar Piastri does come back into the race, we're unfortunately unable to give you visual because of the camera has suffered a, air quote, technical failure. So we did not get any – there were no onboards in this race of Oscar Piastri. I know because I tried to get on them from the beginning, and they just – they don't exist. So even if you go back, if they somehow manage to turn it on and download it and upload it to F1 TV, good for them. That'll be the first time that I've seen it. But live, you got nothing. You got nothing. So I tried, Oscar fans, and Australia, I was on your side. I think I was the only one that actually messaged the help channel about it. So I was trying to get you your boy back on TV there. Yeah, fighting the good fight. But yeah, I mean, what else can you say about that? I mean, it's a lap one incident, and yeah, they were just the sufferers of it. Happy Daniel did not have to thank the halo for the tire that came off of K-Mag's car. Yeah. That was kind of scary. And as for the Brundle Machine Gun Kelly thing, if you think that was awkward, wait for 2 weeks' time when I'm sleep deprived and I have to watch that happening with God knows who's going to be there.
See, I didn't see this because I watched the F1 TV one, especially when
Hinch is on. Yeah,
James Hinch is doing it. Like that's who I'm watching. So I didn't. What did he do this time?
It was classic Brundle, and Machine Gun Kelly actually talked to him, but Brundle obviously did not know who he was, other than he was a recording artist, and Machine Gun Kelly, who may have been high, drunk, on something, who knows. Was wearing sunglasses, Dolce and I mean, he looked like he was kind of stoned. Tried to get Martin Brundle to do an air guitar on the grid, and then Martin Brundle wouldn't do it because he's Martin Brundle. And then Machine Gun Kelly walks away, just does a big thumbs down right at Brundle in the camera. And Brundle goes, I don't think I'll be on his Christmas card list.
Oh, Lord. Please, sir. So, yeah, that Vegas one's going to be a wreck. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, good call out there, the formula. I'd forgotten about the machine. Yeah. I actually got a lot of traction on the tweet I put out of them, which was pretty much, if you think that was awkward, get ready. Vegas is going to be worse.
So anyway, continuing on, Rachel Fleming says, "Hi guys, barring the start and the final lap, that was disappointing, but I think maybe fatigue now is coming in. We have had 4 races in 5 weeks, including 3 sprints. I just think we have too many races now. I would drop at least 4 races off the calendar. I would drop Miami, Saudi, Mexico, and Abu Dhabi, but those aren't going anywhere. Great race from Fernando, and that finish was something else. Lando was again on the pace. Such a shame that Max is blocking that first victory. But Merck were beyond dreadful. They had no pace, and in the space of the year have gone from heroes to zeros. Well, Las Vegas is next. I suspect the buildup in the show will overshadow the race itself." Yeah. As we've kind of talked about, I think, Vegas is going to be an adventure.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of 4 races in 5 weeks, I think that's too many. It's hard enough for us just to kind of do our thing with it. The sprint format gets old when you see it again and again and again. You do not want to adapt it for all of the Grand Prix. It's just that simple. It's too much artificial tension for not a whole lot of gain, as both a coverer and a fan of it. I think that I totally agree with that point. In terms of calendar, what we would drop off, I mean, we can have those debates. There's lots of circuits that maybe we shouldn't be going to that we are for various reasons, bags of money being dropped in certain people's laps. We know that, but anyway, I'll just kind of leave that there. The finish, we talked about that, was pretty good. It was awesome with Fernando and Sergio there. Lando, like we talked about, kind of in starting to get in that arena, maybe actually able to make at least Max earn things, at least for the end of the season, which is not anywhere where we ever thought we would ever be. So I think back to testing, and he's punching the wall, and he goes from that to, you know, 8 seconds off the win here. It's pretty damn good. Merck, yeah, we talked about that, beyond dreadful. I tried to ask a couple questions of Chris Medland, actually, in the post-race show that he was on. He responded by kind of saying, yeah, it was just kind of a bad setup. They went with what they thought was going to work. It wasn't an over-compromise. Like, I think that was kind of the easy thing to say. Well, they over-compromised from what worked at COTA because they were afraid about the plank thing again. That wasn't it. They just missed the setup. So, and then you can't change it, and then you're stuck, and that's kind of what it looks like. We'll get to Vegas in a week or in a half time when we try to build that up.
Yep, plenty to talk about there. All right, next up. Andrea Hanna says, "Max and Lando is in a league of their own. The gap to P3 was crazy. Is Aston back? Alonso was fantastic. Stroll too, to be frank. It helped that Ferrari had only one car and Mercedes completely bottled it this weekend. The next 2 races will still be interesting." I think kind of in the kind of second, third, fourth on both the constructors and the drivers, there's still a lot to play for and a little bit down the order. So I think there's still a lot to watch for and look for. And we'll hopefully we have a brand new circuit, and then Abu Dhabi. That's all I can say about that.
So
we'll see.
So he's not here, but he did text me a thought, and I thought it was actually pretty prudent here. So Cody chimed in and said, "If Red Bull was somehow magically deleted without changing anything else, this season would be a banger to end. All bangers. Norris would be taking an unbelievable and unexpected championship push against both Alonso and Hamilton." So it really kind of is the season of, you put the post-it note over P1 in the drivers, and you put the post-it note over P1 in the constructors, and you have what Liberty kind of envisioned when they went to this formula. You really do. And you really have it up and down the grid. And you've got every team scoring points and every team scoring double digit points, which is something we have not seen for a very long time. So yes, Max has been amazing and dominant, and Red Bull are just on a whole another level, but there's a lot of good things, and the smart people are figuring this stuff out slowly, but surely. And what the other thing is you're seeing is F1 car development is not linear. It's not a straight line. You got to go back to go forward. You got to sometimes you try something, it doesn't work. I mean, that's what Aston Martin was doing. You know, they tried something, they thought it was going to make a step. It didn't make a step. It made it worse. But at least they had the know-how and the gumption to say, this isn't working, because there's a lot of ego and a lot of wind tunnel data that says, this thing should work. Why don't you work? But they took it off, and look what happened. So that's hard to do. So I give them full credit for that.
and we will develop into 25. 25 will be an incredible season, and then we'll start from scratch and blow it all up.
Yeah,
because that's how we like to do things here.
Uh huh.
At F1.
Yep. That sounds all about right.
Next up, Dave Doherty asks your thoughts on Aston Martin's strategy.
I think we talked about it. They went backwards to go forwards, and that was the right decision for that car. They proved themselves that they were able to still be fast. And I think the team kind of got a reset and look for them to do well in the next couple of races. I mean, yeah, we don't know what Vegas is going to throw at anybody. So who knows who's going to be good or bad there.
All right. So our last one is from, I'm going to mess this up and I'm very sorry, Aloysius Pendergast.
I read it as Aloysius Pendergast.
Aloysius, that is probably much better than me because I'm awful. Name's terrible. Anyway, continuing on. Love to cry now. Why are the rules different on the pit and why is no one investigating track limits? Would love to hear more about Aston Martin's setup and qualifying. So I think we've talked about Aston Martin, but I don't think track limits was a huge issue on this track. No, I think we did have a couple laps deleted here and there, but typically that was for more dramatic offs.
Correct. And because of the topography of the track, you have natural barriers on the outside of the curbing. So you don't have a whole lot of situations where you really go four wheels off. And so that, remember, you got to remember what the standard is. It's not two wheels. It's not three wheels. It's all four wheels, not even being beyond the line. You can still touch the line and still be good. So if you were on it, like the Lando pole lap in SQ3 is probably what my guess is he's probably referring to here. Why would that count when some other ones didn't? Well, he's only half off. he was riding the curbing there, but he still had two wheels on. So, but there were some times deleted in both the regular qualifying or at least – in the sprint, I know there were some lap times that were deleted.
Yeah.
I mean, Oscar Piastri, when he had the big off and the first lap there, you know, that time is obviously gone. Didn't matter. You still
I think Albon had a couple times deleted. Yeah. But like, this is also just for me to take the time to say, this is why old school tracks are far superior because all of them typically have these kind of natural, discouragements, I guess, of exceeding track limits. The track is designed to be the track. I think the rest of these are just gigantic piles of pavement, and that does allow for a little bit of room to explore for some of the drivers without the threat of going into grass or gravel or whatnot. But anyway, so I love this track. It's great. So we didn't have to talk about track limits, and I love that. Anyway.
No, I mean, it's refreshing not to have to sometimes talk about it. And, you know, one of the things that is a consequence of having multiple use facilities is, you know, you build a track for F1 and for MotoGP. MotoGP needs that runoff. Why? Because guys would die. Because when they high side off the thing, they have to have somewhere to land. And you have to have somewhere to stop. Otherwise, if they're hitting the wall at 140 miles an hour, you're going to have motorcyclists be dying. And that happens, and it's tragic when it happens, even when it does. But it would be a whole lot worse if we went down the other road. So that's why we have this. I wish they could come up with F1 configurations versus a MotoGP configuration, or throw a wall or Armco at some of these, you know, quirky corners.
Or at this point, they've built so many tracks in the world. I think they could probably do two completely separate championships and hit them all.
Maybe. That's an idea.
Would not like that, but.
I don't think Red Bull Ring or Coda or, you know, there's a lot of them that I know share, like, you know, in Spain, MotoGP is huge. Like Catalonia, that they make their book, I think, from MotoGP than they do from F1. So, you know, there's obvious reasons why those host both. But I just wish there was some sort of more natural deterrence for track limits. Definitely.
Great. Anyway.
All right. So thank you very much to all of the contributors. It's nice to have good interaction this weekend across all of the platforms. It's fun to see. All right. So we will now get into our weekly awards. We will start with the rubbish. So D, What goes into ye bin?
It's been a while since I've done this one, but it has to be TV direction for me. Quite few big disasters, and that were pointed out by the commentators. And I think minimum three times people would be like, Crofty or Brundle would be like, who's going to come out of these pits first? And then they'd cut to like a random person. And you'd be like, okay, I guess we're not going to find out. And then there was an overtake. I think it was Perez and somebody else. But somebody got them into turn one. And then everybody always comes back into turn four. But instead of staying on that battle, we cut to the crowd for an obnoxiously long period of time. Then we cut back to the track to no cars at all. Sit there for a second, and then suddenly they appear, and we at least get them into Deceit of DeLongo. But, like, it was so bad. And then, like, the battles at the end of the sprint with Ricardo and Sainz, and then, obviously, I think we missed a good chunk of the Perez and Alonso battle at the end. We have seen Max cross the finish line enough. Also, we can watch him cross for half a second. Great. Cut back. Like, we don't need to see the whole last half a lap that he does. I would like to see the half a lap that actually means something. Thank you.
Anyway. Yeah, I mean, that's an old, and ironically enough, he was there. That's an old Bernie Ecclestone thing where he used to tell them, you know, the race winner gets the moment regardless. Except if somebody wins a world championship, ask Oscar Piastri that, because he won that race and didn't have that moment. And that always kind of just made me salty. But that neither here nor there. Yeah, I mean, it could have definitely done better. Communication between the booth and the feeds, I think it was tough here. I don't know. You know, it's usually somebody local that's kind of doing the flipping of the cameras or whatnot, but it's supposed to be universal now. So that was kind of concerning that it was that kind of off on the international.
It was also not having an actual offboard shot of the Alonso and Ocon incident. And as you said, the beam being in the way for the Alonso Perez crossing the line. I think there's just a couple, I know it's a very difficult job to do, but I didn't really have anywhere else to put this, and I just was annoyed.
No, that's fair. It's fair. I mean, I kind of thought it's kind of the same things. But that's why I always try to recommend find your favorite driver and follow their onboard, because mm-hmm. I think you see things that they just can't show. Except if you're an Oscar Piastri fan. Again, I tried. But not successful there. My rubbish goes back to Friday, where I say we really shouldn't try to squeeze in a session when there's a hurricane bearing down on your circuit. I know the U.S. is not perfect, but one thing that they do really well is they have that radius of, if there's lightning within like 15 miles of the place, we stop running and we get the fans out of the grandstands and into a shelter place. That's probably what should have happened there. There is no reason to me that you should have had a car out there. I mean, we are so lucky for so many reasons. Like, you almost can't count them, you know, that we didn't end up having a car literally get blown off the track, you know, if with a gust of wind or the rain coming in so bad. You've got cars with electric hybrid engines. What the fuck happens if one of those things gets struck by lightning? I don't even want to think about shit like that. But that was kind of out there, and everybody kind of just didn't say anything about it. And I'm like, well, what the fuck are we doing running when it's that fucking dark? Yeah. So something to think about. I may not be the ruler of the world, but I don't think it's a good idea to run, try to squeeze in a session when there's a fucking hurricane. And that's what hit. By the way, I've seen shots of other parts of Sao Paulo that got hit a lot worse. That was a hurricane that went through. It just wasn't spinning.
Yeah, anyway. They look nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we will now move into analysis paralysis. Dee, what's your thought?
I am going to go with Mercedes. A, for the whole setup debacle and just being utterly lost. Then for tripping over each other for a while, Russell and Hamilton. And then them talking about switching George to potentially a three-stop or at least not plan A, but then not really deciding to do anything about it and then just letting him sink like a rock, eventually retiring him. Also, Hamilton couldn't really get anywhere, and it was just all around a disaster.
All right, that's a pretty good candidate. I don't love calling out my own boys, but I'm going to do it here again just because – it feels like Lando is so owed something to the weather. I don't know why they can't figure out the weather. like they and they put time into it and they put codes into it and they do all this stuff and it just doesn't seem to work. It causes Piastri not to get in a lap. That causes him to start in the midfield. And when that happens, the potential for badness and bad things goes way up on the first lap, and there it was. And, you know, that's what I get fearful of when they're in that midfield, because the midfield is crazy and it's meant to be crazy. That's where all the weird shit ends up happening. And that's what happened. And he got caught out for no reason. So unable to do anything better from that. And it was all kind of started because it was either a garage position thing or you just didn't think the weather was coming in as quick as it was. So either way, McLaren get my analysis paralysis here. It's kind of hard to pick one this weekend, if I'm honest. The strategies were pretty much straightforward. I mean, you might want to give it to Logan Sargeant for starting on the mediums in the sprint when 19 out of 20 start on soft. And I went, oh, that was the easiest tweet I put out. I'm like, 19 out of 20 are on the soft. The only one who's not is Logan Sargeant. Have fun with that, son. All right. Dark horse of the day. Dee, what you got for this one?
So I have a feeling I think we're going to go opposite here, but just because I have nowhere else to put this, I'm going to put Lando Norris just because we didn't think that the McLaren was going to be as strong as it was this weekend. I think getting the sprint pole was awesome. Kind of staying with Max much more closely than anybody has this season, even putting up a little fight from behind for 2 seconds. I mean, granted, then Max just drove away, but it was a great feeling for a moment. Yeah. And I think this is once again, and I think I've said this many times, but it's just gets you excited for next season, and you just really, really hope that they can keep making this progress over the off season.
Yeah, definitely. I will give this one to Fernando Alonso and for Aston Martin for fighting back and for having the courage to go backwards to move forward, because like we talked about, that is a hard thing to do. You've got engineers and data telling you these upgrades should do this to this car. And then when it just doesn't work, it's hard. It is not an easy decision to take something that you'd spent 6 months developing and thought was going to be a springboard into your next year car to say, this doesn't work. We have to take it off. They did it. That was courageous. And it worked out for them this weekend. So maybe they're not as dead as we thought they were. So good on you, Aston Martin, for that. And for that fight at the finish. Great stuff there. Driver of the day, D, what you got here?
I'm going with Fernando Alonso for some of the greatest defending I have ever witnessed live. Yeah, really not much more to say than that. It's just awesome to see him in a competitive car, and you wish it was a race-winning car. I know it's just rumors and it's not going to happen, but I would honestly love for him to be in the Red Bull with Verstappen. I think that would be the single most entertaining year of all time. But one can dream. Anyway.
Yeah, I think that's probably where that's going to end up is a little bit, because I don't see Helmut Marko ever putting a personality. Like, could you imagine that dynamic?
I would love to see Alonso response to Helmut Marko saying some BS that he likes to say. I would live for it. It would be the I would love it for it to happen. It's not going to happen, but I would love for it to happen. Anyway, sorry.
So, okay. So you would have, let's just play this for a minute. You would have Max Verstappen and Helmut Marko against Fernando Alonso and Flavio Briatore, who's still his agent, by the way.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Could you imagine the team principal's presser for that? Or the driver presser for that? Or the media pen for that? Oh my God. Yeah. I don't think the Spanish sources would be going crazy.
That'd be so incredible. Oh my God. Just like, I feel like what this season has also been lacking, that like 2020 and 21, like just the off track drama. I think other than Marco, everybody's been pretty calm. What that would give us both on and off track would be unmatched. It would 100% be a documentary, film, whatever, in the future. It would be incredible. Anyway.
And both of whom have fan bases that go really, really deep and cut really, really deep when they feel slighted, too. And oh, by the way, if you could somehow get Lewis Hamilton in a competitive Merc on the outside of that,
but
maybe.
Red Bull's infighting. Like, that'll distract from all the rest of their stuff, which will just, they'll collapse a little bit from the inside. And then you bring everybody. I think this is the greatest thing for anybody and everybody.
Well, we can hope. Me, we will monitor it.
Me mostly, but yeah, anyway.
We'll hope. But I like going down the rabbit hole for just a minute there.
Yes.
But I'm actually going to, because it's our show and we can do this, I'm going to split this award. So I'm going to give it to Lando Norris for the start. Amazing start. P6 to P2. Made it all up. Made up all the qualifying mess that he had in one corner, and that was awesome to watch. And for pushing Max probably harder than he had been for most of the season. But Fernando Alonso for the finish. Fernando Alonso and Sergio Perez for just that amazing show. I think I said on the national post-race, I chimed in and I said, put that in my vein. I want more, please. Because that's what we do it for. Wow. So great stuff there. All right. So we got to talk about predictions. Like I said, this was kind of the coulda, woulda, shoulda weekend. I had Lando on the pole. Damn weather system broke that of me. I had Lewis Hamilton winning the race. Well, I was very, very wrong about that. Cody was a little bit better. He scored 3 points this weekend. He got the quali time. He got P6 on the bonus picks. And he got the prop bet. He got P1 in the sprint with Max taking it. I got 2 points this weekend. I got P2 on the podium for Norris. I had Norris winning the sprint. Just missed out on that. But I had the fastest lap time just by slight margin there. So not the greatest prediction results. But Cody takes the weekend. By the end of this year, by Abu Dhabi, I will tabulate where we all are. And I will reveal where we all are. So stay tuned for that if you are so inclined. But D, we've now reached the end of our rundown. Final thoughts on Brazil and initial thoughts on Vegas, if you have any.
Yeah, I mean, Brazil continues to be my favorite track. It's just so fun to watch those cars go around there. It's just incredible. And that is all I'll say there. And the people there, it looks like the best environment. And I would love to make an appearance there one day. And Vegas, I think we've teased quite a bit this episode. and I don't really know what my feelings are about going into that race. But I will watch it and I will be not there. But I will try to be awake at 1 o'clock in the morning for the race. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I basically have to do my old... Malaysia strategy of maybe power napping early to try to make sure I'm awake for the odd times of these sessions, because they're going to be very odd times. But there will be glitz, there will be glam, there will be lots of weird things going on, lots of flashing lights and shiny things. We'll see what the actual race ends up looking like. I've heard Monza-esque straight levels. Nobody seems to know what the initial setups are going to be. It's a good thing it's not a sprint weekend. Could you imagine that?
Thank God. Kind of,
yeah, way too much. At least this year. We haven't mentioned it next year, but let's see. So we will be here. We will cover all of it. We will be attuned to what's going on throughout the course of that weekend. We'll monitor whatever good news. I'm going to keep my eye on this Haas right of review thing with the USGP. If anything comes out of that. I've not heard when they're even potentially going to have that actually be heard. We'll stay attuned to that. We'll keep all of that for you. But D, thanks a lot for hopping on, for being sporty this weekend. Appreciate it as always. And as always, folks, stay safe. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support and we'll see you on the next one.